Welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Tonight I have a great friend and an incredible person. She's been in the business a long time and been around hospitality a long time, and she's a bullet. That's all I can say. Wendy Carter, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Thank you for being on. So tell us a little bit about, you know, growing up, and you know, the kind of environment it was, and what your parents taught you, because I know you were in an Army family, right?
Well, yeah, to a certain degree. So I grew up in rural Kansas, and my dad spent a good deal of time in the Army, and my mom was a homemaker. We were a blended family, so I have 10 total brothers and sisters. And so very large family. And then my mom later remarried to a farmer, a local farmer. And so I was raised the second part of my childhood on a farm.
That's incredible. Yeah. So what did you learn about, I guess you had a pretty good work ethic on the farm, right?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, that's kind of sun up to sundown work for basically if it's a farming family, then that's a job for the whole family. And honestly, my husband's background is fairly similar to that too. And so, yeah, when it's harvest time or time to plant, everybody's working.
Yeah, there's no, the Mother Nature decides when you work. You don't have your own choices, correct?
Absolutely.
Yep. So you started working in the hospitality business, pretty well right from the get-go. You worked for the Darden Group, and for those of you who don't know, the Darden Group, they're a pretty major a restaurant chain group. They have Olives and Red Lobster and the Yard House, and you went into their training program, right? Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, before even so the Darden restaurants, I worked at a local cafe as a kid. So I mentioned my large family. So we learned pretty early that if you wanted absolutely anything, you had to work. So I started actually working in the kitchen of a local cafe when I was 11 years old, baking biscuits and washing dishes. So
wow, that's amazing.
And I find it pertinent to mention that because the owner of that little cafe allowed me to come in and kind of cut my teeth and learn what even having a job and working was about. And I was with them for almost the full 10 years before I moved on to a different area. So,
wow.
But yeah, I left my small little town of Stafford in Kansas and moved to Hutchinson, Kansas, where I went to work for Darden Restaurants. Specifically, my area was Red Lobster, but, they do own the Olive Garden as well. And I was so amazed when I went there because I had to first pass a personality profile test to even get a job, just, you know, serving or hostessing or anything, ground level job in there. So you, at the application time, you took a test and they faxed it into corporate. And then, you know, within a few hours or whatever, they would get an answer and say, yes, this person's personality fits our organization, which I found strongly intriguing. But I did enter their training program, and that the one for like a server or whatever was just 7 full days. And so you were in a classroom setting. You learned recipes. You learned wine profiling. You learned guest service. You just learned everything about the organization and their values. And then after that, you would actually shadow a worker for 3 days, and then a worker would shadow you for 3 more days after. So it was very thought out and designed to ensure that there was consistency across the organization. And I was so intrigued by the training program, I said like my first week that I wanted to be a trainer. And so kind of set my goal on that and actually did achieve that while I was with them. And that gave me the ability to kind of take their program and bring it to life with their other new hires at various locations.
That's incredible. Now, they taught you a lot of stuff, even like recipes and upselling and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just how to do the job. It was also how to sell the products, right?
Yeah, they did. So, I mean, when you think about it, you're young and really all you're trying to do is, you know, wait tables or bartend or something and make some cash. And meanwhile, they're teaching you what menu items they would prefer you sell first because the margins and when the return to the company. And they're teaching you how to, you know, you taste every single menu item so you can describe the flavor profile. You go to a beverage section where they're pairing literally all their signature beverages with their menu items so that you can do suggestive selling. You know, they're known for their lobsterita and just different things, the Bahama Breeze, things like that. And so they teach you all about that. So when a guest comes in, you immediately have in your mind what you're suggesting for an appetizer or a signature drink or a dessert as well at the end of dinner. So, yeah, very, very informative.
Yeah, so you're not only, you know, waiting tables and doing all that stuff, but you're also kind of almost like designing the menu for them because they're going to be asking you, so what do you think, blah, 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 right?
Yeah, you're definitely guiding the guest experience because you are so ingrained in the menu and, you know, and those menus change so very often, about every quarter or so they're doing new features and things. And that's what intrigued me and really got me thinking kind of down a marketing path, is I was able to see how their creative would position specific menu items that were intended to sell. And they were teaching me the why behind that. And so, yeah, very, very good experience with Darden.
Yeah, they're a major brand, and kind of getting into it at a young age like that was a huge huge for you because you had you built a good foundation to start, and I'm sure it helped you immensely in the future with any restaurant decisions or stuff like that that you were involved with. Now you never really aspired to be in the casino business. You just kind of fell into it, right? Because you relocated, and there was Darden didn't have a restaurant there. Tell us the story about that, because you had a hard time getting a call back too, right? From that.
You know what? I did. And I laugh even to this day with this person I'm about to tell you a story about, because it's the funniest thing. I had been in, like I said, restaurants for nearly 10 years before I joined the Darden Group, and I was with them a good while. And so because of a family situation, my husband's grandparents were aging and somewhat ill, and they didn't have what we felt was enough support near them. We decided to move up north to Iowa to be near them. The rural community that they lived in, the closest Darden restaurant where I could transfer to was over an hour away, over an hour commute. And yet there was a casino about 15 minutes from where we were moving. And so I decided not to take a transfer with Darden because I had small children at the time. I had two little boys, and one was 6 months old. And I just couldn't see that commute making sense for my life. And so I thought, for sure, I can just get on in one of these mini restaurants in this casino, no problem. I'll just do that. And so I applied several times, and I did not get a callback from the F&B department. And so I went in there one day to kind of try to find out why. I wasn't getting the answers I was pleased with from HR. I didn't feel like I was getting strong consideration. So I went to one of the restaurants and had lunch. And when the server asked me how my experience was, I said it was fantastic, but I would still like to talk with her manager. Was her manager there? And she said, well, that's unique. You know, are you sure everything's okay? And I said, yes, it's great. I'd really like to meet your manager if she has 15 minutes to talk. And so she called Linda K. Smith, who I worked for a long time, and now she's a dear friend. And Linda K. came to the table, and I said, I don't have any problem with my experience, but I've tried to go to work for you for, you know, a month or better, and you have postings all the time, and I can't get a call back. And she said that she had never seen my application, or at least it had been overlooked. And in fact, she had a opening in her steakhouse that she would love to put me to work, you know, that day or shortly thereafter. And so she hired me right then and there. And so I got my gaming license and went to work in their steakhouse.
And that's how you got into the casino business.
And that's how I often joke with my friends in the industry that we don't pick it, it picks us. And I believe that wholeheartedly.
That's right. Yeah.
Very few of us set out as, you know, young and sprightly 18 or 21 year olds and say, we're going to work in casinos. We just, our lives, you know, send us down that path.
Tell me a little bit about what you learned there when you went to the casino.
Oh, at Lakeside.
Because that was a different environment, right, than you're used to at the restaurants, right?
Oh, for sure. Incredibly different when you think in terms of restaurants as an amenity, who are not freestanding and hanging their hats on all the sales and service that happen just for a restaurant. It keeps me always thinking in casinos about how we could master running our businesses that aren't gaming to that same degree of efficiency and commitment, because unfortunately, I think we'd all agree that some in some casinos, our F&B and even, you know, our spas, our hotels, our non-gaming entities don't necessarily take center stage whenever we're mapping out our business plans and when we're focused on, you know, the very finite details that come with running a casino restaurant. And so I think that a lot of those principles that were in place for those standalone restaurants could greatly benefit any restaurant or non-gaming entity within a casino with laser focus, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And were you able to make a difference there? Were you able to share your vast experience that you had?
I was able to make a difference. There's no, I would be lying if I said I was able to take, you know, these casino restaurants to Darden level focus and efficiency in my time there. But I would say that that experience and what I was able to apply within a casino environment certainly set me apart, because I was able to work my way up from literally a, you know, part-time server just trying to get my foot in the door to, you know, first a lead, then a supervisor, then a manager, and I moved on to group sales, so first banquets, because I think I did well in detail and kind of this big picture mentality about detail. I executed banquets, and then I was later asked to be the property's first group sales executive. So we had plenty of convention space, and we wanted to start a bus program. And the company looked directly to me and said, you know, I think that you've got just the right unique experience that you may be able to do this really well. And so I did do that job, and I enjoyed it very much. But later on, as the company grew, the marketing department had a need for some leadership within that area. And somehow those worlds collided, and the GM at the time and the marketing director at the time came to me and said, you know, we need more leadership in here, and you've done well in sales, and, you know, we'd like you to join the marketing team. And I'll forever be blessed, grateful to Damon Butler and Tammy Hansen at the time, who were those two positions that said they saw kind of an alignment.
And a different trajectory, and the right trajectory, right?
A completely different trajectory in terms of business impact and the job and what it is. And, you know, my background, my schooling was in sociology, and Damon specifically was really good at explaining to me why he thought that was impacting the way I did business, the study of people and making decisions, and applicable in a marketing realm. So I'm very appreciative of that.
That's great. The workplace is very different from women back then. Tell me a little bit about that, because I'm sure the only women at the table, right?
You know, to be honest with you, the majority of my career has been, you know, lived out in the tribal gaming world. That specific position in that property was the commercial gaming experience that I have. And that property was first owned by Grace Entertainment, but quickly acquired by Herbst Gaming when I worked there. And and that certainly was a male-dominant leadership group and team. I wouldn't say I was the only woman at the table, but there were very few of us. And that's often still applicable today in certain situations. It definitely was a different world. It's evolved a lot over time. And I even think that my entrance into travel gaming has probably been part of the reason that I've been more a part of a more diverse leadership group at many of the properties I've worked at. But it was challenging. I was very young, and it was certainly male-dominated. So,
yeah, there's no question about that a little bit. How did you deal with that? Because a lot of people would say, you know, that's a hard thing to deal with, you know. How did you deal with that when you were the only woman at the table?
For me, I think that I probably preconditioned myself quite a bit to think that it was I don't know if I can say it was as big a deal as it was in my mind, but to me it was. I think that often at that time, when I take myself back 16, 17 years, I think of kind of the anxieties that lived within me being young and joining that leadership group. I would say that it seemed as though I felt as though I had to work harder than anybody at the table. I had to perhaps work faster than anybody at the table. I had to justify my actions maybe to a higher degree than some of my peers. But I was okay with that because I feel like earning your way is a critical part of our development as executives. And so, I have actually said to a young female that I know in the industry that's facing something fairly similar recently, I said, you know, if you have to work harder, faster, and smarter than the guys, then do it. And and that's okay, you know?
Yeah, you were telling me that when we talked on the pre-interview, and I find that very intriguing because at the end of the day, it's what you bring to the table.
That's
if they
the way
respect
I see it.
You, and yeah, I mean, if they respect what you do and you're bringing something to the table which even they can't achieve, then you're part of the game, right?
You know, I see it that way, to be honest with you. I see that in any and all leadership groups, whether they're male or female dominated. I think the nuances can be a little bit different based on who's at the table. But really, at the end of the day, we all, when we join a team, everyone's eyes are on us and they're expecting us to make some impact. And they're expecting, you know, us to kind of earn our way and prove our worth. And I think that that's largely acceptable. We're responsible for very important parts of our business. So,
yeah.
So I think the advice would be don't let that cloud your judgment or hold you back if you're a female in a male-dominated leadership group.
Yep. Just bring your A game to the table. That's for sure.
Right.
So you had a short stint in Meskwaki, but then you went to Choctaw, which is definitely not a male-dominated. You were working with some of the most incredible women in the industry, Janie Dillard and Tammy Gwynn, right? Tell us a little bit about...
No mention that was, you know, very, very important to my career development because I was the player development manager there at the Meskwaki Bingo Casino and Hotel in Northern Iowa, and I'm forever grateful to them. However, I was only, you know, 2 years in with my tenure with them when the Choctaw Nation called and gave me this incredible opportunity to move closer to home. When their recruiter called, I said, you know, I'm not interested. I'm only 2 years in at the position. I pretty rapidly got off the phone, and then I had a conversation with my GM, Patrick Brown, a little bit after that and told him about that phone call. And I said, Patrick, why on earth would that bingo hall in Oklahoma want me to leave this beautiful casino and come to work there? And he said, Wendy, there's been a lot of development in the Choctaw Nation since you've last been there. You better look into that. And so I started looking, and my goodness, that company had grown, and they have their beautiful crown jewel flagship resort in Durant, Oklahoma. And So it was just a very different view than I expected. And so we talked, and I talked with their recruiter again, and eventually I did go to work for Choctaw. And you're right, a driving factor to the decision to make to go down there had to do and basically built and run by these female executives that, you know, had all this heart and energy, definitely inspired by their presence there. And even eventually, Tammy moved on to another leadership role, and Heidi Grant was backfilled, and she was critical in my development over time as well. But Tammy was a tough cookie. She had very high expectations. I think the fact that those women are all tribal members, and so they have a very in-depth connection and need and want to provide for their people. They set very high expectations for those properties, and but they also they afforded at least me and as far as I know, the other people on the team, any and all resources that were needed to meet those expectations. And Tammy specifically well inspired me to kind of look to achieve more and to grow the business, but also grow myself as an executive and a leader. And she did a great job of maintaining this culture of pride. They have, you know, they have 22 gaming properties now. Some are very small, some are very large, but one thing that you will always notice when you visit any one of their properties is the standard of quality of guest service and pride that each and every employee, whether tribal or non, takes in their role with them. So very, very critical in my development.
Yeah. What advice would you give the younger women coming up in the industry?
The younger women coming up in the industry, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and I think the very first thing that is so important for me is that we don't expect any kind of special consideration because we're female. I think we really should look at ourselves as executives and whether or not we're the right person for the job rather than whether we're female or male. But once we determine we're the right person for the job, then we just have to be very confident and bold in our abilities and ensure that we're bringing value to the organization, whatever that organization is.
Yeah, that's and you said be bold, which I thought was a very, very good word to use. I hadn't heard that before. Tell us a little bit
about real quick though, that comes from me is once I read a quote and I don't even know who wrote it or said it, but it said, speak the truth even if your voice shakes. And that really resonated with me because sometimes we do feel like maybe we're the underdog or maybe that, you know, someone may not care for our opinion. But when I say be bold, that's exactly where that comes from with me because I carry it with me every day. That some things need to be said, whether you're nervous or unsure if the group wants to hear them or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's definitely part of also being passionate about what you do, right? Being bold. So it's all hand in hand. Now you're working with a very special woman also at Cache Creek, and you have a great team there. And Carrie Smith, she's an amazing person. She's also been on the show. Tell us a little bit about the group there and the leadership and how that all came about for you.
I am, it is so funny how it works out because I really truly believe you land on whatever path you're intended to be on and you don't have a lot of control over that. But I met Carrie a few years
that's
back.
For sure.
And we had an awesome phone conversation about a role that was available at her prior property. And we weren't able to come to any kind of a situation at the time that worked out for me moving out. When we met, the Choctaw Nation was opening or working to open a huge expansion on our Durant Resort, and timing didn't feel right. So nothing really came of that other than I made an awesome connection in the industry and Carrie, and I enjoyed my talks with her. So fast forward a few years and I get this call from an executive recruiter that Carrie Stout-Smith is now at Cache Creek in Northern California. And for me, my children had gotten a little bit older. My son was looking at college out in California, and it just made perfect sense to have a conversation with her. She's phenomenal in terms of, her leadership style and how she rallies a team and works always for the tribe's interest and the business interest. And so I was able to connect with her, and I joined the team here at Cache Creek about 3 months ago, and we are just having the time of our lives. We're under expansion as well, and lots going on here. So it's just been fantastic.
Yeah, it's definitely very exciting times for both of you, in the whole team over there. What do people need to know about climbing the ladder in the gaming business? What are the key things?
Oh, goodness, that's a hard one. I think, well, the one thing that if we're talking specifically about young people, and this comes from a conversation I had with my son recently, sometimes young people seem to think that they're going to start at the very top of whatever area that they want to join, and I don't think that that's necessarily the truth for most people. So basically it is to, you know, do the hard work and get the experience within the organization that you need, whether that's in operations or HR, marketing or IT, but to work hard. And I think that one thing that, at least for me, has strongly set certain teams apart is, you know, the core values of those teams. Make sure that you're, for lack of a better quote, with your people. Find your people, a team that your core values align with theirs. Because I think we do our best work when that is kind of the situation that we're in. And then, you know, just work with integrity, honesty, and humility with our teams and with our vendor relationships as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. You need to have integrity and, like you said, the core values, right?
Yeah, I think the alignment of core values. If you're working at an organization where yours don't align with theirs, then there's very little either one of you can do, I think, to make that relationship work really well. So it's important to do your research and land in a place where you fit, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to mesh with the culture. Tell me a little bit about what you see in the gaming industry now. Where are we?
Oh, man, we're at a very important time in our industry. I think with sports betting, you know, in the conversation and on the horizon, that changes things. I think with online gaming in the conversation and on the horizon, things change for brick and mortar facilities as well as any, you know, organization that's going to dip into those areas of the business. You know, the legislation about those opportunities is always on discussion, and it's, you know, now in it'll be discussed differently in every market. So I think it's important we do our research and kind of start mapping our plans for what that looks like for us. Those are the biggest things for now.
Business is good.
Business is very good. My short time in California, I've come to realize that many, many people are building or expanding. So there's competition is tough, certainly. But it's a good time in gaming.
Should we take some calls?
If you would like to, that'd be great.
Absolutely. This has been fantastic. Okay, let's see what we got here. You got a lot of callers calling in here tonight. Let me see. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Wendy Carter?
Yes, thank you, Tino. As always, enjoying your show. Wendy,
thank
you. Wendy, I'm looking at your website. It certainly appears your property is absolutely gorgeous, and you should obviously take a lot of pride in that property. So kudos to the entire tribe and the folks at your lovely property. I'm interested in how, and can you give an example of how your studies in sociology parlayed into marketing? I have often said marketing is part sociology and definitely part mathematics. And how, first, would you agree with that type of idea? And if you do, how can you give some examples of how you parlayed sociology, mathematics, and made it all work as one happy combination?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that is a very, very good question. Kudos to you. And thank you for the compliment on the property. We're very proud of our location in the Cape Hay Valley. For me, the interest in kind of human behavior in folks really sparked my interest in database marketing and analytics. So one of my very first positions in the marketing department was that one specifically. And I think that that kind of intrigue that comes with studying humans kind of sparks a lot of ideas in how you may manipulate offers or segment your database. And then the database and mathematics part in my mind is kind of like your payoff, right? So that's where you go to evaluate whether or not your gut was right whenever you were having all these ideas. So certainly for me, I do think over time, and especially when you work in the casino industry for a long time, we all have a gut kind of what's right and wrong with our database, just kind of a gut instinct. But I think that especially as we move into the future, that data measurement of whether or not, you know, our ideas are actually paying off for our companies is critically important. I like to say you can't run the business from a spreadsheet, but you also can't run the business from great big ideas. We definitely need both firing.
So true.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, thank you. I know you have a bunch of calls, and so I just wanted to slip that in.
Well, if you got another question, that's okay. You have another question?
With social media, especially Facebook, and the trials and tribulations Facebook is going through, to say the least, how have you utilized Facebook more than just a information source? I've had challenges trying to gather information from Facebook. No pun on Cambridge Analytica, but using Facebook, whether it's by promotions, and then you have the challenges of ages, things like that, age restrictions. Have you what best tools, whether Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or any of the social medias, have you used, or have you seen that you've really liked, or thought, you know what, someday I'm going to give that a shot?
So for me, I would call it about 2.5 years ago, I sort of shifted in the way that I manage the platforms on social. And it's not just Facebook, but Facebook is definitely the hub for our age demographic in gaming. Many casinos' guests are 55 plus or a little younger, and that particular platform at the casinos I've worked at is the most adopted in our loyal guest base. And so Facebook is prioritized pretty highly in our strategy. But I think the changes that Facebook has made over time, you know, one day it used to be you build a community and you can talk to that community of people however much you want. And what it's evolved to is most certainly a paid media platform, because you don't talk to your whole community base unless you put funds, advertising funds, behind what you're saying. And so that to me moves us out of a place where it's just a wall where we share, you know, maybe not high quality imagery or vetted out copy or things like that. It's less instantaneous. And now when we're putting thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars behind our social media activity, it's now became paid media. And so like, you wouldn't let me, build a print ad you were going to pay for, you know, in clip art. Right. So now the content matters. We're paying to show it. Otherwise only 1-3% of our guests, followers even see it. Now the content needs to be super high quality in my mind, and it needs to be telling your brand story in a manner that you're very proud of, because you're using a good portion of your advertising funds to show it.
Is the idea to add social media bucket or to just simply take from, we'll say, billboards, radio, television, or obviously it's a mixture? Do you notice one bucket might be getting pinched a little bit more in order to support your social media funds?
You know, I haven't personally looked at it that way. I've looked at it that traditional media still stands and it still has a very important role in our overall strategy. I can say that I have migrated funds from some print into digital at some places that I've worked, because I do think that the nuances of the properties I worked at, and I don't think this rings true for every property, so take it with a grain of salt, the print publications, so like I recently was near, you know, Dallas, Texas, and the Dallas Morning News is a great big newspaper. And so I migrated a lot of my print funds to either their online advertising or in some to my social, and I could see certain markets where that might make sense. But overall, I think that a well-balanced strategy, including all those mediums, is very important.
Oh, that's very interesting.
That's great. That's great.
Well,
thank you
again.
So much.
I appreciate both of you guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a good night. Great
right.
questions.
You too.
Good way to start it off. Let's see what else we got here. Okay. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Wendy Carter?
Hi, Tino. Hi, Wendy. This is Linda Gordon with SCA. How are you today?
Wonderful.
Good.
Linda.
Hi, Linda.
How are you?
It's been a pleasure listening to you and this remarkable journey that you took starting at 11 years old is really something.
Yeah.
I congratulate you on this journey and your bravery and your being bold and willingness to take on things that and try things that you've never tried before. And it's laudable. I do have a couple of questions for you, and then I'm going to let you go because I understand that you have lots of people who want to talk to you. So, with regard to when you started out, and in women in gaming, particularly in a male-dominated culture, which, as you mentioned, it still is to a great extent. Did you notice that it didn't take very long for your credibility to build when they noticed that you worked hard, you respected the job, you understood your relationship between your job, their job, and the revenue that you produce and the contribution you make? Did you notice that they quickly understood that you were a valued member?
I don't know if I would say quickly because
well, like you said, that's an honest answer. That's definitely an honest answer. I love it.
You know, especially in tribal gaming, many of the tribes that were where I worked did not have fully developed marketing departments when I started working there. And so there was sort of, I not only faced, you know, this kind of like male-female inequity in some cases on the team, but I also faced this idea that marketing maybe was like the people who did posters, right? And so I took that to my advantage, and I used that to try to also educate the executives around me of the impact we could have through database marketing, through brand storytelling, through social media, through casino promotions and measurement of those. And really what I tried to do was integrate myself into each department's business to a degree where male, female, yes or no, doesn't matter. They want me a part of their business because I'm impacting their business. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does.
Yeah,
yes.
That's a major answer.
That's very,
and I think just to interject, who, everyone that's listening, that's a major thing that Wendy just said. I mean, if you're in there being impactful and aggressive and showing results on every level, you can't be denied. Is that correct? Am I right saying the right thing, Wendy?
That has been my experience for sure.
Yeah. Great question, Linda. Go ahead.
Oh, my pleasure. I have a question with you with all your food and beverage background. I love this suggestive selling thing that you learned early on at Darden. as you said, it's across all work environments, actually. But do you find, with your background in food and beverage, and you probably have some some warm feelings for that part of the business since you started there. How do you feel non-gaming, which is part of food and beverage, and gaming revenues, how do you think they converge either at your property or overall with regard to revenue share and where you, you know, and how you integrate those two or how you separate those two as a business model?
That's a good question. I do think that that answer, and much like many answers in casino marketing, are going to be different based on the property and the market and what all's there. But I will say that, you know, running those restaurants as efficiently as possible, and when I say efficiently, I don't mean cheaply, but I think that
right.
suggestive selling and menu engineering matters in terms of closing the gap if the margin, you know, is not one that's favorable to the casino. In many, many casinos, restaurants are loss leaders or rarely some of them do not contribute to the bottom line in a positive way. And so I do think it applies whether the each individual non-gaming entity is a profitable or non-profitable section, business unit in your organization. But I do think there are many markets and namely resort destination properties who can certainly position their non-gaming entities to be, you know, contributing factors to the bottom line in their business. And I think that it's important that we get rid of, especially in any kind of rural casino where it was largely accepted for many years that non-gaming may be a loss leader, and reprioritize our resources and make sure we have the correct focus on our non-gaming entities, because I do think that they can, when positioned as a total package kind of trip driver situation that is, you may not drive from, I'm going to take it this way, you may not drive an hour and a half from or 2 hours from San Francisco to Cache Creek Resort for the steakhouse alone, because you'll drive by 15 excellent steakhouses on your way.
Mm.
But you may drive
yeah.
there
mm-hmm.
for
yeah.
an excellent steakhouse, a wonderful spa experience, gaming, certainly a golf experience. And so I think when I say brand storytelling, I think it's really important to position ourselves where we're appealing to guests at a broad spectrum level that they realize there's so much to do. Because for so long, the messaging was gaming only in many markets because that's, you know, how we pay our bills. But I do think they can contribute when messaged correctly.
Yeah, that's a wonderful answer. Yeah. Thank you so much. I totally agree.
Thank you.
I
enjoyed your question.
Thank you for your time today.
Linda, thanks so much. It was a pleasure having
my
you on
pleasure.
The show.
Sure, my pleasure.
Take
bye,
care.
Wendy.
Have a good evening. Great question.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, the other thing that does, too, is it's just, you know, the husband wants to go play golf and have a steak. The wife can go and go for a spa and play some slot machines, right? So you have something
so.
For everybody.
Yeah, and then also as we work towards building kind of a younger demographic, of course our 55-plus really love the slots and tables, but we talk often internally at Cache Creek about, for me, my age, which I'm not going to tell you on air, but for me... For me, I like to go visit casinos, and you'll certainly get my whole wallet, but you'd probably get a larger cut. You'd get some spa, you'd get some F&B, you'd get some golf, and you'd get a smaller casino cut, but you'd get the whole thing, you know? And so,
right.
And we talk
yeah.
about demographic and this experiential expectation we have now is a little different than it has been historically.
Yeah. And me and my wife, we're the same way. We don't really gamble, but we love everything else. So when we go to a casino,
sure.
we'll do everything else except, you know, we don't gamble. So, and that's a really good experience for us. Let's take another call here. Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Wendy Carter?
Hello, Tino. This is Nick Wassing. How are you?
Nick, how are you tonight? Good to hear you.
I'm great. Hi, Wendy.
Hi.
I have one question. And the thing that really stood out to me was how you described your childhood and raising. And I wondered if you could describe just some of the skills you acquired being raised on a farm in a rural community, as well as 11 years old working in a kitchen, things you use today.
Well, I don't want to oversell it. I can drive a tractor, but it wasn't, I have seven brothers out of those, 10 siblings that I mentioned I had. So I wasn't like really bucking bells or anything on a farm, very often, but the skills that I acquired really, I think, were central to this idea that my family, we have a humble background. We weren't well off. And I think that many people in the family and that many kind of mouths to feed, for lack of a better statement, taught me that I could, one, very young, nobody sent me to work, right? I just asked if I could earn some money. And in the owner of the restaurant that I worked at, I think that his commitment to teaching a young kid who he allowed into his business, basically work ethic and integrity, really was what shaped kind of my future. And really it was central around this idea that I could have as many shifts as I wanted. It was up to me. He didn't make me work. He allowed me to. And that for me taught me that, I could earn and do well. By the time I was 16, by the way, I was supervising that restaurant. Well, women, 40 plus years old, I was now the boss.
Wow.
Because I felt like he taught me how to run his business and then trusted me to do it because I was reliable and honest. And so that to me is the more critical part about my development.
Yeah. You brought a lot to the table.
I'm sure
yeah,
I made
great.
Plenty of mistakes
yep.
along the way too, but he was thankfully decent to me to teach me as I went.
That's great.
Anything you apply in your current role today?
Yeah. I mean, what I really apply in my current role is this sense of duty, right? So that particular organization only had two full-time employees. And so it was the one restaurant in many surrounding communities. And so it was very, very, very busy there. And so if you didn't come to work, you literally broke down service. You impacted all your coworkers, all the team members. And so if you didn't have a strong work ethic and you weren't reliable, you didn't have a sense of commitment to your team, you didn't last there very long, because it really was mission critical that every person on the list show up. And I try to carry that with me always. I have for my whole entire career, this, being reliable and showing up, do what you say you're going to do, has been very important.
Fantastic.
Great. Nick, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Have a good night. Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Wendy Carter?
Hi, Wendy. This is Ron Maletti from Velocity Interactive in Phoenix, Arizona. And I
Hi,
was
Ron.
Wondering...
How are you tonight?
Hey, Tino. How are you?
Good, good, good.
So I was wondering how you predict casinos changing to keep up with other entertainment over the next 10 years or so. So, consumers have a lot of options, more high-tech options keep coming online. How do you think casinos will need to adapt? And then how do you think us marketers need to prepare for that change?
That's a very good question. I think that casino, it really is, because it's on, if it's not on our minds as marketing VPs or CMOs, then it should be, because it's a very valid question. Entertainment specifically is a part of our business that's, becoming ever so challenging more and more every year as the entertainers have more options too. They have more options of what venues to play and how their tours look. But side note from that, as marketers, I think we have to think about being very diligent in our planning and our decision making. I don't think that I think gone are the days that you could just have a big event and they will come. I think that it's incredibly important to run performas and postformas and constantly track our return and then also in our marketing, our advertising and our brand messaging. It used to be, I'd say 80 plus percent in many markets you were putting out a message that was specific to a call to action. Come to the concert, come to the promotion, book a hotel room. I think that the brands that are doing it really, really well now are telling this, that they've developed a persona, whether that be luxury, fun, excitement, whatever that is. And they're telling, they're using more of their media dollar to tell that brand story, which has a much longer, in my mind, impact on the business. We're just kind of learning that in very many markets about, you know, this idea that we can solidify our brand stance over time if we use some of our resources to, you know, specifically try to aid in you know, guest recall and unaided recall and telling our story in a manner where they feel like they're going in a place that they want to be because the people like them are there. I think that's all more prominent now than it has been to us in the past.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think that once you have that brand, you know, solidified in the consumer's mind, then it starts to create us, you know, to lead some of the decisions for you in terms of what the entertainment is, because you can use the brand as your guide to, like, what should be there and what should not. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Great insights.
Thank you.
Ron, thanks so much, and thanks for calling in. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a good evening.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, that was great. Some really great questions tonight.
Yeah,
really great questions. Linda's great, isn't she? I love Linda.
Yeah, she is. I'd like
to meet her.
She's
one of those
people
that have been in this business so long and know so many people. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Wendy Carter?
Aloha, Tino. Aloha, Wendy. How are you guys today? It's Mike Kaahanui.
Good.
Hi.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Can you hear me now? All right, that's great.
Absolutely.
Hey, Wendy, great call so far. You know, just very interested to hear on that background. It sounds fantastic. And honestly, a lot of the callers ahead of me got some of the good business, you know, questions out of there. But I always have a couple, you know, that are always important to me as I get further and longer in the business. And you know how small the industry gets after that time. We talk about how do you develop and how do you look for that next generation of talent so that you have that succession plan in place and really nurture that growth. What's something that you do in specifics when you're trying to identify that talent?
Oh, that's a fabulous question. I want to start by saying I think that that is perhaps our biggest weakness in many areas of our industry, because these younger folks have a different expectation of a work experience than some of us have had in the past. And so the days when we just wanted a job or an opportunity to prove ourselves are not the same that they used to be with some of our younger generation. They want to live and work downtown where they can walk to work, not drive to rural areas. They want to work from home. They want to do all kinds of things some of the younger people do. And so to say that I have a great method or plan in place would be not true, but to say that I am constantly thinking about it and identifying talent within my organization would be true. I don't know that there's a secret formula, but I do think that we have to have it on our mind, kind of the differences in how young folks, what they expect their work experience to be. Does that make sense?
So it certainly does. And then, so I guess, you know, I guess the other part of that is when you identify those individuals, you try to bring some realism to their expectations so that they understand that though you have these high expectations of yourself, you know, you got to prove it sometimes. You got to do the work so that people acknowledge, and that's really the biggest thing. And that's been the trend I've heard in your conversation all night is you do the work and it's hard to deny, right?
Yeah. And honestly, it's tough because it's hard because overcoming kind of that, their kind of expectation they've developed for what their work will look like, it's really, really difficult. And I've been in situations where I've thrown people in the fire who've shown a lot of talent. And when I say throw in the fire, I mean, they just happenstance happen to be the person who's there and available and has worked really hard. And the only thing, many of the times, you know, talent rises to the top, and many of the times that works out really well. I have had some experience with some younger people, even ever so recently, not, you know, now, but in the last few years, that they have an expectation of a payoff of their hard work too. So I've had a couple run, you know, maybe interim positions or various things, and they did a decent job, but or a great job for their experience, in fact. But if the organization doesn't end up ultimately hiring them for that role, it has manifested a little differently in the younger people that I've worked with than it had in years past. So I think it's important that we, when we do give them responsibilities and they have any kind of expectation of a promotion or anything, we're super clear that they're working to earn a job, you know, because I have seen some, I've run into some situations where, you know, they did a good enough job for a certain amount of time and the organization went with a more experienced person, and there was definitely more emotion attached to that decision than I was accustomed to as well.
Well stated. I know I have. I think many people have run into that same experience. You know, having had the great fortune of working with Carrie myself and being in that market.
Oh, you did?
You know, you obviously I have, specifically at Thunder Valley. So working there and understanding that climate, you know, you got some great competition coming in, and you talked about it's a good time to be a marketer, and it's a good time to be in the casino business, but it's going to be heavy. Can you talk a little bit about what your expectations are for Hard Rock and then for the Boyd property coming in as well?
You know, I really wish that I had been here longer than 95 days or whatever it is. I haven't. I'm not ready to say really where I stand, other than I have seen marketers fall victim to some idea that competition was not going to be impactful on their business. And so I think my early out the gate answer to that would be, of course, it's going to be impactful. Of course, we need to work very hard right now. We're well positioned to kind of clean up our house and get ourselves buttoned up to where we've got a great stance in the market before that competition comes on. And that is my early, now is the time to prepare is all I'll say to that.
Well, I'd love to say I've been fortunate enough to visit within the last couple of months the property. Gorgeous. Love what you guys are doing. And it's
Thank
good
you.
To see a team in there that's very eager. So, you know, great call, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Very nice
thank
to
you,
meet
Mike.
You, and we are eager.
Yeah, most definitely. You might see a LinkedIn request from me just because I like to say hi.
I'll be watching for it.
Take care, Mike. Thank you so much. All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. I think we have time for one more. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Wendy? Yes, do you have a question for Wendy, Tino Magnetta? Yes, I am.
Hey, how are you guys?
Can you hear me?
Mike,
hey. Good.
Well, I know you guys only got about a minute left. Just, Wendy, good conversation. I enjoyed it. A couple quick questions. You touched on online gaming, and you touched on sports betting, sports booking. Two questions. One, are you hearing the demand for those, call them products or platforms, from the customers? And two, without, you know, revealing company or property secrets, what are you doing broadly to address those if there's demand for it?
I right now have not heard. I would not say that there's a large demand for either yet, but I do think that that's largely related to the fact that our guests don't always know what's on the horizon or in legislation for their casino of choice until they see something somewhere else. So they may or may not be very in tune to what's kind of on the horizon for gaming. And as far as preparing for both of those things, what I would say is we're watching, of course, any and all legislation very closely. We're having lots and lots of internal conversations about, you know, what those two things, how they may fit for our organization. And we're also monitoring other markets, right? So there are, you know, other parts of the country that some people are kind of dipping their toes into those things, and we're keeping a close eye on them. I think specifically for sports betting or booking, many tribal casinos are in a situation where, you know, floor space matters and how you allocate that square footage matters. And I think that one of the bigger things any of us need to be doing is kind of monitoring how those situations are going other places and making decisions of whether or not we want to allocate any of our very valuable space to that.
That's fantastic. And lastly, the conversation you had with, I believe it was your son, about not going right for the top position or not expecting the top position. Record that, because I have a son that needs to get that message. So.
Hey, we will do that.
We'll send it to you.
I have three sons that are all, you know, kind of, they say, well, I know someone in a casino, maybe I'll go to work there. And I say, maybe valet, not, you know, to start with, that's where you start.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, I appreciate it, guys. Have a great night.
Same to you. Thank you so much. Well, Wendy, it's been an incredible interview, and it's amazing how an hour just flies by. You've talked the whole time. Some great, great wisdom and some great knowledge and some great passion, and I really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, especially having just made a major move to a different gaming market. I certainly appreciate it. And to the listeners, I'm always looking to network and ideas share with others. So I just really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Wendy. You have a good evening, and we'll have you back on the show.
Very well. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much. Good night. All right. That was great. Wendy's just an amazing person. She's incredible. I've done a couple of panels with her and known her for a long time, and she's really something. Thursday, I have a special show. Brian DeCora, CEO of Snoqualmie, he's going to be at the Mariners game, the season open at the Mariners game, with his whole team, because they have a deal with the Mariners. And we're going to meet his whole team, and we're going to talk about team building and how he was able to bring people from various verticals and bring them together and make this incredible team. And so I'm very excited about that. It'll be the first time that we've done a show where the guests will be in a different location. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. You guys have a good night, and God bless.